Alright, Jabal, say good morning. A lot to do today. Today's daf is Tes Zayin, and we are picking up on the bottom of Tes Zayin. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Greg and Rachel Levitan in commemoration of the first yahrzeit of Rachel's mother, Sylvia Schreiber, Sara Gidl, Bas Yisrael, Baruch Zichrono Levracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an aliyah and the family in Nechama. Thank you for the sponsorship. And also by Paul and Kathy Pollack, in commemoration of the yahrzeits of Paul's parents, Shmuel ben Zechariah and Sarah Bas Avram, Zichronam Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an aliyah and the family in Nechama. And I will say with that, let's continue. So we're picking up on the last line on Tez Vav Amud Beis, which actually, well, it's the second to last line, last word on that line. Klalo shel davar derech lasuye. So most remember, again, we quoted a Braisa yesterday. The Braisa very much mirrored the Mishnah with two cases, ultimately, again, of Hekdish. The first of where the Mum preceded the Hekdish. The second of where the Hekdish preceded the Mum. Very much like the two cases of our Mishnah. So says the Gemara, Klalo shel davar dereisha la'asuye. So when the Mishnah says Klalo shel davar, remember again, Lashon of the Mishnah was, I'm sorry, let me just find it here. Klalo shel davar harehin kechulu mechol divrei. Right, so this is case number one, where the mum preceded ultimately again the hegdish status. So the Braisa said, Klalo shel davar harehin kechulu mechol davar. These animals, once they are redeemed, ultimately are like total chulin, which we've already learned before. Salach l'mais, when the mum precedes the hekdish, and there is redemption, so ultimately they become like chulin l'chol davar. So it says, Zimar klalo shel davar d'reisha l'asuye, shoktan b'chutz de'pater. So ultimately, again, the klalo shel davar d'reisha teaches me that even if they are shechted outside, totally pater. There's no shchut de'chutz because they've been totally redeemed. Klalo shel davar d'seifa. What about the klalo shel davar of the seifa? What does that come to include? Tezayin amud aleph la'asuye chalavo. Both say that comes to include ultimately the fact that the milk ultimately will be us. Remember again, case number two is where the hekdish preceded the mum. Amar mar, so Rabbi Seymar said, in niftin tamimin. So ultimately again, these animals are not redeemed while they are unblemished. Ve'in matfisin l'chol zevach sheyirtze. So ultimately, again, nor can you simply make them into any carbon that you choose. To which the Gemara says, "Tamimin hu delo mifriki." So it's, you only can't redeem them when they are unblemished. Ha ba'ali mumin mifriki l'chol sheyirtze. I'm sorry, ha ba'ali mumin mifriki. Ultimately, when they are a bal mum, you do have the ability to go ahead and. You do have the ability to go ahead and redeem them. Both say, what are we talking about over here? If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Ha ba'ali mumin mifriki. Osam shenis abru kodem pidyonon, vinodula achar pidyonon. We're talking about a very specific case over here of where the mother animal, became pregnant prior to pidyon and then gave birth after pidyon. So that's when Mara is saying over here, they cannot be redeemed when they are tamimin. The offspring cannot be redeemed when they are tamimin, but only can be redeemed, and we're inferring from that, but can be redeemed after they are blemished. You cannot make them into any carbon you want. However, the Gemara says, L'chol sheyirtzehu de'in matfisin, hala otzo zevach matfisin. But apparently, again, when the animal is an uber, you can go ahead and give it the same status, carbonic status, as the mother itself. To which the Gemara says, let's analyze this. Hechi mashkachas lo de matfisin lo otzo zevach. What exactly is the case where you can go ahead and make it into any carbon that you want? V'niftin b'mumon. And ultimately, again, and redeem it if it develops some type of mum. Nemik to have it to you of the Rav Huna. Would this not be a refutation to the position of Rav Huna? Amalecha Rav Huna, to Rav Huna would say, Hu adin da'afilu bali mumin a niftin. In reality, even when the offspring is a bal mum, it cannot be redeemed. And since the Reisha said ultimately that it can be redeemed if it is unblemished, therefore we'll say the Seifa to go ahead and maintain symmetry also said that it cannot be redeemed when it is unblemished. And I will say, since in the Reisha, where after redemption, ultimately the animal becomes chulin, and therefore can be made into whatever carbon you want, Tana Nami Seifa, l'chol zevach sheyirtza. Therefore, we'll say the symmetry is maintained, and therefore the symmetry tells me that the Seifa also says that you could, in the Seifa it says, and it cannot go ahead and be redeemed for any karban you want. Good. Vashochtan b'chutz patas. Remember, this is going in the first part of the Braisa. That if the animal had the mum first, right, mum first, and then hekdish second, so we'll say, so then you redeem it, the animal becomes chulin l'chol davar. And therefore, you could even shecht it outside, and there is no problem. So, Rav Huna Masni Chayiv, Rav Huna said that, no, if you shecht it outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you will be Chayiv. And what's the case? Umukim la bedukin sheba'ayin. It was actually very interesting. He goes ahead and what? He goes ahead and he establishes it as a case, dukin sheba'ayin. Rashi points out a couple of different girsos. It could mean a cataract, or it could mean some type of other eye blemish. Va'aliba de Rabbi Akiva de Amar im alu lo yerdu. And we'll say this reflects the view of Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva says, as much as we do not lechatchila offer up this animal with dukin sheba'ayin, but if you already brought it up on the Mizbeach, you don't go ahead and take it down. So we'll say in a case like this, ultimately, so again, Gemara just pointing out that Rav Huna just had a different version of this Braisa. Rav Huna's version of the Braisa, it was even in the animal that had the mum first, and then became Kodesh, and you redeemed it, and it becomes Chulin, if you went ahead and you offered it up outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you would be Chayiv. Rav Huna sets that up as dealing with the case of Dukin Sheba'ayin, according to Rabbi Akiva, who still holds that such an animal is fit for the Mizbeach. Okay, says the Gemara, by the way, just as an aside, the Dukin Sheba'ayin, if that sounds familiar, that's because in the Kamsa Bar Kamsa Gemara, right, when Bar Kamsa went ahead and tried to incite the Caesar against the Jewish people, so remember he said to the Caesar, the Jews have rebelled against you, Vaharaya, if you send them a karban, they will not offer up your karban. So the Caesar sent the karban. What did Bar Kamsa do? He injured the karban in the eye, in the way, and the Lashon of the Gemara is Bedukin Sheba'ayin. Either he caused something in the eye, did something in the eye, the Gemara says in a way that for the Romans was not considered to be a mum, but for the Jews would be considered to be a mum. So amazing, and that mamish is what sparked, that's what sparked the whole Churban by Yesheni. So the Gemara goes, so also just the same exact Lashon. Good, Gemara goes weiter. So remember again, whether before redemption or after redemption, the animal goes ahead and creates Timur. This is talking about a case where the animal becomes a Baal Mum after the Hekdesh. So this is case number two in the Braisa. So we're ultimately again, first the Hekdesh status occurs, then the Mum occurs. So that animal has the ability either before or after its Pidyon to affect Timura. Amrav Nachman, Amrav Baravua, Utmuraso La'achar Pidyono Mesa. And ultimately, again, says the Gemara, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Baravua, that in such a situation, the tamura of this animal, even after it is redeemed, is left to die. The Gemara says, why is that? My taimo, hechili of it. Because what exactly should we do with this tamura animal? Likrave, to go and offer it up on the Mizbeach, that you can't do. Why? Mikoach kidusha dechuya ka'asya. Both say, comes as a result of compromised kidusha. Why is it compromised? Kedusha Rashi says, Kedusha Dechuya, Shekvar Niftu. Because we'll say, this is a Temura animal. Again, to be clear, this is the case where the animal was first consecrated and then developed the Mum. Which means you have Kedusha Saguf. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is that what? Even after such an animal is redeemed, there's still a level of consecration which occurs. So the problem is now, even after it is redeemed, if you could go ahead, it could go ahead and affect Temur. If you tried to substitute another animal for it, they both become Kodesh. The problem is, what do you do with the Temura? Rav Huna suggests the Temura has to be left to die. Why? There's nothing really to do with it. On one hand, to go ahead and offer it up as a karban, you can't do that. Why? Because it's Temura for what's called Kedusha Dechuya, deferred or compromised Kedusha, because the original animal for which it was substituted was a redeemed animal that formerly had Kedusha Saguf. So that is not a strong enough Kedusha to allow it to go on the Mizbeach. On the other hand, lifrike, but to redeem it, lo alima lemitvas piyona. It's actually very interesting. To be redeemed, you also have to have a certain level of kedusha. So therefore, again, this animal doesn't have the requisite level of Kedusha to affect true redemption. So this animal literally is in carbonic no man's land. Not holy enough to be redeemed, not holy enough to be offered up, and therefore the only thing you could do with it is Hilchach Mesa. It's left to die. Maskev Rav Amram. I v'tischa b'mum l'baylim. Why can't it be consumed by the owners? Right? Let it develop a mum. Let it develop a mum. And once it develops a mum, it should be consumed by the owners. V'chima bein zu l'tmuras b'char. U'maiser. We'll say, why should this be any different than the tmura for a b'char or for maiser? This none, because we learned. Tmuras b'char u'maiser. We'll say, if you have the tmura for a b'char or for maiser behema, hein uvladan, uvlad vladan, atzov kala olam, harehin ki b'char u'maiser. Suppose this is actually an interesting case. If you have tmuras b'char u'maiser behema, right? So if you have a tmura, somebody did tmura for a b'char animal, or ultimately again for maiser behema. So we'll say those animals and their offspring, and their offspring's offspring, had the status of b'char and maiser behema. But the good news is, v'yochlu b'mumon lebaitlin. They'll say once they develop a mum, they become permissible for consumption by the owner of the animal. So why should this case ultimately be any different, where you have over here again the tmura of the animal, which became kodesh, developed a mum, and was now redeemed? So we're saying that if you did tmura for that redeemed animal, I don't know what to do with the tmura. I can't offer it up as a karban, I can't redeem it on its own, and therefore it's left to die. To which the Gemara says, I have a better idea. Just let it develop a mum, and once it develops a mum, the owner could eat it. Why should that be any different than the cases, ultimately again, of tumuras b'char or tumuras maiser behema? Amar le Abaye, here's the difference. Zeh shem imo alav, zeh shem imo alav. Right, remember again, I will say, each time the offerings, right, or the offspring, have the status of their mother. So the Gemara says, zeh kula tumuras b'char u'maiser. So mikri, so we'll say ultimately again the tmura, ultimately for the meaning, and the mother means the source in this case. In this case, it's the original animal, right? This one is called zeh kula tmuras b'char u'maiser mikri. So we'll say so the tmura of the b'char, the maiser, is called a tmura of b'char u'maiser. In other words, it derives its identity from the mother, from the source animal, and therefore it becomes a b'char or a maiser behema animal. Ma b'char u'maiser b'muman misachlan lebaylim. So I'll say, remember again, in the case of tmura, the tmura animal derives its identity from the mother animal, quote unquote, the source animal. And therefore, its identity is a direct replica of the source identity. Therefore, in the case of Maiser Behema, tmura of Maiser or Bechor, just like Maiser or Bechor is eaten once it develops a mum, right, is eaten by the owner once it develops a mum, so too the tmura animal will have the same identity. Vizeh, shem imo alav, tmuras kachem mikri. And I will say in our case over here, where again, you have the original animal, which was an animal which was hegdish, or which was sanctified as kodesh, developed the mum, now redeemed. Now you switch out, and now you swap it for another animal, you do tmura. That tmura will also have the same identity as the source animal. Ma kachem will be what? Will be kachem, tmuras kachem. When it comes to tmuras kachem, Ma kachim lo mislichi, lo misach or lo mischali, ela bepeyon, just like a carbonic animal cannot be eaten unless it is redeemed. Af tmurasan nami lo mislichi, ela bepeyon. So Tribo said the tmura cannot be eaten unless it is redeemed as well. Vaha lo alima le mitvas pidyona. And ultimately, this animal is not kodesh enough to be redeemed. Hence, we are stuck. And hence the Gemara says, Rav Huna's suggestion that halacha lemaisa in this case, the tmura animal is simply left to die because there's nothing else to do for it. It is not kodesh enough ultimately to what? To be offered up on the Mizbeach, nor is it kodesh enough ultimately to be redeemed. It's actually interesting. In order for an animal to be redeemed, there has to be a strong level of kedusha, right? Ultimately to be taken away. Apparently, if the kedusha is compromised or weakened, it doesn't allow the animal to be redeemed. So this animal literally is stuck with absolutely no recourse except to be left to die. Tanya kavasi di Rav Nachman. We have a braisa which supports Rav Nachman. Minayin l'trumas psule mukdashin shemesa. From where do we know about saying that the truma of psule mukdashin? Now remember again, we already did this yesterday, where we're comparing our case to Psuli HaMukdashim. Psuli HaMukdashim means an animal which was sanctified as a carbon, which now developed some type of psul, which precludes it from being offered up as a carbon. So we are comparing our case, ultimately, again, the animal that was Kodesh, developed a mum, and was now redeemed. We're comparing our case, ultimately, to Psuli HaMukdashim. So the Braisa says as follows. From where do we know that if you had Psuli HaMukdashim, about saying, right, the animal that was disqualified from being offered, and then you affected Tmura with that animal, right? You tried to swap out another animal for that one, and affected Tmura. So where do we know that the Tmura animal is left to die? Talmud Lomar, Mima'alei HaGeira. Talmud, this is actually very interesting. The Gemara darshins this pasuk is actually quite interesting. So this pasuk is talking about the halachos of kashrus. Ach ezeh lo sochlu mima'alei HaGeira mafrisi ha'parasa, es ha'gamal ki ma'alei geira hu, u'parasa ino mafris, tamei hu lochem. So we'll say, interestingly enough, this pasuk which speaks about kashrus, the Gemara darshins to understand that there are certain animals which have kosher symbols, but are still not fit for consumption. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. There's the first Y line in Rashi. Mimali agira tamehu, the sefer dikrak sif tamehu lachem. The end of the pasuk writes, tamehu lachem, vidarshinan hachi, yesh lechad davar shiyesh bo simani tara, va'asr ba'achila. We will say there are certain animals which have simani tara, they have the kosher symbols, kosher attributes, but nevertheless, you cannot eat them. What cases are those? Zot tumuras psuli hamokdashin. So the Gemara darshins over here, mimali agira tame. There are certain things which, even though they are kosher, simen wise, nevertheless, ultimately, again, tell you can't eat it. We'll say, what does it come to exclude? It comes to exclude, ultimately, again, tumuras psuli hamokdashin. That even though it has the simanim of a kosher animal, you are not permitted to eat it. But 1 second, I need that Rosh Hashanah to teach me about there are five different chatos offerings which cannot be offered, but rather again they are left to die. I learned that out from that pasuk, to which the Gemara says, no, the five chatos that are left to die, hahu mimafriseh haparsa tamei nafka. We'll say that I learned out from the other phrase in that pasuk, mimafriseh haparsa tamei. Tanya Me'achir Baisa that supports this. Minayin l'chamish chatos mesos. From where do I know? I will say about the five chatos that are left to die that you cannot eat, that cannot be offered up. Talmud Lomar mimafrisia parasa tamei chamish chatos mesos hilchasal gemirula. But I will say again, the five we'll get into this sugi about the five chatos that are left to die. Right, there are five different types of chatos that you cannot redeem and you cannot offer. Therefore, they're left to die. We'll get into that. So we'll say. So the Gemara says that's halacha l'moshe misinai. Right, I don't need a pasuk for that. To which the Gemara says ella ki asakra l'trumas asham, tumuras asham. Excuse me. Rather, the Gemara says you're right. The pasuk is used for the tumura of an asham. That tumura of an asham is also left to die. To which the Gemara says, "Tumuras asham nami hilchasehi." But 1 second, we'll say the tumura of an asham is also a halacha lemoshe misinai. To which the Gemara says, "Kol shebechatas mesa ba'asham roa." After all, we have a concept that any case where a chatas is left to die, the asham is left ultimately to graze ela liolam and develop a mum, be redeemed ela liolam chamish chatos mesos. Rather, I will say, ultimately, again, the pasuk is used to teach me about the case of the five chatos that are left to die. So, 1 second. Now, I will say, we've kind of switched gears a little bit. So, you're telling me now that in the situation of five chatos that are left to die, I now have a pasuk that teaches me this halacha and a halacha l'moshe misinai. Why do I need both? V'itzrich kra, v'itzrich hilchasa. I need both the pasuk and I need the halacha l'moshe misinai. Why, the Gemara says? The imikra, because if we had just come from the pasuk, I would have thought to myself, that halacha l'maisa, these chatos, these five chatos, could be set out to pasture, develop a moment, redeem it. There we'll say, halacha l'moshe misinai teaches me that what? It cannot be put out to pasture to develop a mum, but rather again it's left to die. And if ultimately I would have just said the halacha l'moshe misinai, Hava minahecha da'avad ikri va'achol ma'ari chamish chatos. I would have thought that at the end of the day, if I, although I'm not supposed to offer it, if I did offer one of these five chatos, I did it already, so the kohen could partake of it. Therefore, again, isur ika, lav leka, I would think that there's only an isur, but not a lav. Kamash malan di ika lav. Therefore, again, the pasuk comes to teach that there's a lav associated with it as well. Vibay sima, la kushe davar haba mimali agera, ledar haba mimafresia parasa, ma la alon mimisa, af kama mimisa. Otherwise, the other possibility ultimately is to equate the two drushas, that which is learned out from mafresia parasa to that which is learned from mali agera, teaching that just as the first case is a din of misa, so to the second case is a din of misa as well. Okay, we'll say that affected. By the way, the case of the five chatos, we will come back to that case again. Mishnah, we'll say this is actually quite a fascinating case. Hamakabel tzon barzel mina oved kochavim. So we'll say in this situation, I am receiving tzon barzel from an oved kochavim. We'll say, what's the case of tzon barzel? Take a look at Rashi. Hamakabel tzon barzel, Rashi says, shesham lo oved kochavim behemosa bedamim ketsuvim, velos is lo osan damim ad eser shanim, Bein Mesu, Bein Hozlu, Va'osan Vlados, Shahayu Lohan, Ad Osan Zman Yubines. What's an interesting case? Here's what's happening here. I'm entering into a business transaction with an Akum. Here's the deal. He gives me a flock of sheep. The flock of sheep is worth $10,000. The way this works is, in $10,000, I have to repay him 10,000. Tzon barzel means the value of the flock is locked in. It's locked in. So in 10 years from now, I have to either give him back a flock worth $10,000, or ultimately, again, give him back the flock and make up the difference in cash. Why would I engage in such a transaction like this? Because, again, we get to split the offspring. So the essentially is, I go ahead and take responsibility for the flock, both to take care of the flock, guarantee the value of the flock in 10 years from now. The benefit I get is we split the offspring of the flock. Thanks, Tzon barzel. So we'll say, so what happens? What's the halacha? Amadeus, vladoseyen petur. I'm sorry, vladoseyen peturin. So we'll say, listen to this. Obviously, we're speaking about whether or not the halachos of bechar behema tahora, right? Remember again. So now the shaila is: does the halacha of bechar behema tahora apply to the offspring of this flock or not? So we'll say, so the Mishnah makes a very interesting distinction over here. Vladoseyen peturin. So the offspring of the flock, are pater, vladei vladoseyen chayavin. The offspring of the offspring are chayiv. Now we're going to discuss exactly generationally what's offspring and offspring of offspring. We're going to discuss again what exactly this means. Hemid. So I'll say, so the first thing the Mishnah is teaching me is that halacha lemaisa, it would appear that certain offspring will be chayif, or sure, I should say, certain offspring will be pater from Bechar Behema Tahora, and other offspring, other generations down the road, will be chayif in Maaser Behema. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Vladosein Sha'osan Son Barzel. So we'll say, so the offspring of that Son Barzel, Kishi Yigdilu V'yibachru V'yiftiru Mina Bechora. So we'll say, interestingly enough, what it appears to be is as follows. That halacha lemaisa, at some point in time when the flock gives birth, so some certain generations will be exempt from Maaser Behema, other generations will not be exempt from Maaser Behema. Again, we'll see in the Gemara how this plays out. Ha'emid vladosein tachas imosein. Now, listen to this interesting case. If halacha lemaisa, literally again, the offspring were put in place of the mother. The Rebbe will say, now what does this mean? What this means, we're going to define what it means in the Gemara, but for our purposes right now, what it means is as follows. If, let's say, the way the arrangement works, is that halacha lemaisa, in the event that there are members of the flock that are missing, the initial flock that are missing, or the flock has depreciated, that the Akum has the right to seize some of the offspring to make up for the deficiency in the flock, then what? Vlade vlados peturin, literally again, the offspring of the offspring are pater. Vlade vlados chayavin, the offspring of the offspring of the offspring will be chayiv. perfect sense. Right? Again, like I said, we're going to see, we're going to establish the family tree in the Gemara, how all of this is working. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Rabbi said, listen to this, Afilu adasara p'turit. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, I don't believe in this generational distinction, but rather, again, every single offspring of this flock is pater. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds that Allah Lamais, in a case of a tzon barzel agreement, every subsequent member of the flock will be pater from Maaser Behema. Why? Rabbi, listen to this. Shachriyusan la'ovid kochavim. So Rabbi Shimon has a different model. Rabbi Shimon says it's understood that each of the offspring has an achrayus. Ultimately, again, or I should say, the ovid kochavim has some type of claim over every member of the offspring. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Shachriyusan la'ovid kochavim dili olam. Whatever the Akum wants to take, he can take. So we're saying, what seems to be happening over here, as we're going to see, is a fundamental machlokas, ultimately, in how the Tzon Barzel agreement works. So you see, I will say, here's what we know. The Tzon Barzel agreement means that the Akum is giving me a flock. The flock is worth $10,000. Tzon Barzel means the value of that flock is locked in, and 10 years from now, I am liable to the Akum for $10,000. The way the arrangement works is we split the proceeds of the flock. So on a most basic level, we already learned the halacha, that as long as an Akum has some level of involvement in an animal, even if a Jew is involved in that animal as well, that animal is pater from Bechor Behema Tahora. Because the operative word by Bechor Behema Tahora is what? Yisrael. Only Jewish-owned animals ultimately are chayv in this halacha. Any Gentile ownership interest ultimately excludes the animal from Bechor Behema Tahora. So we'll say, so the fundamental machlokes, as we're going to see over here, is how does this type of tzon barzel arrangement work? So clearly the first opinion holds, even though we don't even know generationally exactly what all of this means just yet, but the first opinion clearly holds that what? That halacha l'maisa, the Akum absolutely has rights in some of the offspring. Some of the offspring he does, some of the offsprings he doesn't. Earlier generations he may not, later generations he may have. So the simple idea would be, if whatever generation he has a right to take to satisfy his financial obligation, ultimately those animals will be precluded, or will be excluded, I should say, from Bechor Behema Tahora. Some other animals will not. Rav Shimon says, no, it's not the way it works. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, the way this works is, in 10 years from now, when the Akum comes to go ahead and get paid his $10,000, if the flock has depreciated or there are initial animals that have died, the Akum has every right to what? Essentially seize whatever he wants from the offspring to go ahead and satisfy his debt. And then Rav Shimon says, if that's the case, then essentially all of the animals are considered as, essentially, really what Rav Shimon is saying is what? All the animals are what?
Encumbered.
They're all encumbered. Right? There's a lien against all of those animals. And therefore, if there's a lien against all those animals, that means there is an akum ownership interest in all of the animals. And therefore, halacha l'maisa are all pater from Bechor Behema Tahora. Rachel sheyolda min eiz. Right? If a sheep gave birth to something that resembles a goat, the eiz sheyalda min Rachel, or a goat gave birth to something that resembles a sheep, petura min habachora. Ultimately, again, it is pater from bachora. Vim yesh ba miktzas simanim chayiv. But if halacha lameisa, it has some of the simanim, presumably of the mother, ultimately, again, the animal will be chayiv. Okay, we'll explore that case in the Gemara as well. So we'll say, let's analyze. Lememra, dechevon delo nakit mara zuzi birshusa dimara kaima. But it's actually very interesting. So now, let's go back. Let's analyze this tzon barzel idea. So I'll say, so what you're telling me is that halacha l'maisa, that if a person goes ahead and, on a most basic level, enters into this tzon barzel agreement with an akum, so the Mishnah essentially tells me that the offspring, at least initially, are potter, this is the first opinion, the offspring are potter ultimately from Maaser Behema. Why are you telling, what does that mean? Why is that? Because essentially what you're telling me over here is, dechevan delo nakit mara zuzi, since the Akum did not receive money for his flock, right? He gave me the flock. I did not pay him anything in return because we're splitting the proceeds of the offspring. Essentially what that means is what? Birshusa demara kaima. What you're telling me is that the offspring remains in the reshus of the akum. Since there was no exchange of funds, we view the sheep, as much as he's given over the flock to me, the flock belongs to the akum. It's his. It's his. So the Gemara says, Minu, is that really true? I'll say, watch this. It's fascinating. Look what the Braisa says. Son Barzel mi Yisrael. We'll say, watch this. Two Jews are not permitted to enter into a Tzon Barzel agreement with each other. Why not? Mipnei Shehu Ribis. Because we'll say it is a form of interest. Why is it a form of interest? Because apparently we'll say, watch this. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here. Actually, not yet. I'm sorry. The Mipnei Shehu Ribis, we'll say, why? Amal Birshus the Mekabel Kaima. So why is it Ribis, we'll say? Because what it sounds like is as follows. I enter into a Tzon Barzel agreement with Ruvain. What does Ruvain give me? He gives me the flock. What do I give Ruvain back in 10 years from now? The flock plus. Flock plus. I will say any arrangement that's called principal plus is called what? It's called ribis. So I will say, so what does that sound like? That sounds like, again, in this type of relationship, I, the recipient, right, we'll call the caretaker, become the owner of the flock. So we'll say, what the Gemara is pointing out here is we seem to have an inherent contradiction. According to the Mishnah sounds like that in its own Barzal agreement, it is the Akum who owns the flock. It is the original owner of the flock who still retains ownership interest over the flock. The proof to that in our case is the flock is exempt from Bechar. Thank you. The flock is exempt from Bechar. Fine, it sounds like the Akum retains ownership. Yet again, the Braisa says two Jews can't enter into a Tzon Barzel relationship with each other because it's ribis. Which about say sounds like what? That the caretaker of the flock becomes the owner of the flock. So which one is it? About say, watch this. I'm Rabbi Lokasha, not a contradiction. Had the kabel ale own savazola, had the lo kabel ale own savazola. About say, listen to this. Ownership is determined by who by with. Ownership is determined by responsibility. So I will say the case of the Mishnah, and our Mishnah, is a case of where the Akum took upon himself ones v'zola, any extenuating loss or depreciation. If at the end of the day, the Akum takes upon himself loss and depreciation, then what? Then halacha l'maisa, he is the owner. Because he is the owner, therefore when he gives over to Yisrael, the Yisrael is the caretaker. But because the Akum is the owner, that's why the offspring will be pater from Bechar. From Bechar. On the other hand, Vahadalo Kabel Ale on Savazola. We'll say the case in the Brice over here, where it says that two Jews can't go ahead and enter into this Tzon Barzel agreement with each other, is where the original Jewish owner did not accept upon himself ones and depreciation. If that's the case, then the recipient effectively becomes the owner of the flock. And if the recipient becomes the owner of the flock, then when he returns the flock, plus, that's a problem of rimis. Rimis, Rashi says, Kevon de lo nakit, ha'ovid kochavim zuzi, b'shusei de ovid kochavim kami. Fine. So the Gemara says as follows. Amrali Rabba, the kabel ale onse, the kabel ale onsa v'zola, son barzel karisle? So Rabba says, first of all, what does that mean? Right? That's not a son barzel arrangement. Right, where the original owner still retains the responsibility for ones and depreciation. That's not a classic Tzon Barzel situation. Va'od, my paska. From where do you see this distinction? Va'od, furthermore, adatani seifa. So we'll say if that's the case, that that's the real distinction here, then in the seifa of the Braisa that says, Abal Makablin Tzon Barzel mina obit kochavim. We'll say that same Braisa that says two Jews can't enter into a Tzon Barzel agreement also says that a Jew and a Gentile can enter into a Tzon Barzel agreement with each other. We'll say, if that's the case, then halacha l'maisa, why not make a simpler distinction? And say what? Liflok v'lisnei b'didei. We'll say, after the Braisa says that two Jews can't enter into a Tzon Barzel agreement, it says what? But a Jew and an Akum can enter into a Tzon Barzel agreement with each other. I have a better idea. Instead of transitioning from Jew to Jew, and then go from Jew and Akum, just make a further distinction in the Jew-Jew relationship. And say what? And say as follows, Medran Amurim, when is that so that two Jews can't enter into a Tzon Barzel agreement? Tilo Kabil Ale On Savazola. That's only where what? That's only where the original owner did not accept upon himself ones and depreciation. Aval Kabil Ale On Savazola. Shaper Dami. But I will say, if the original Jewish owner accepted upon himself what? Ones and depreciation, then ultimately what? Then halacha lamaisa, the relationship or the tzon bazbukim should be okay. It's because we must remember again, if the original Jewish owner accepts upon himself ones and depreciation, then what? Then what? Then he's the owner. If he's the owner, then there's no ribis later on. So Ella Amar Rava, Rava says, you're right. Idi vi idi de lo kabale owns of his olam. Rava says both cases, what's it? The case of our Mishnah, the case of our Raisa, is where the original owner did not accept upon himself ones and depreciation. Because we must say, for the simple reason, that's not classically how tzon barzel works. So what's the distinction? Bahacha gabi bechora. In the case of Bechar, the reason we said ultimately why the offspring are parted from Bechar, because we all know as follows. In 10 years from now, when the Akum comes to collect his debt, if I don't have the money, because presumably the flock depreciates, or members of the flock die. So I'm going to have to pay him flock plus money, right? When he comes to get his money, if I don't have the money, Tafis le behema. He has every right to go in and seize any of the offspring. Vila mashkech la le behema, tafis vlados. And if at the end of the day, Sirbo is saying, the way a classic tzon barzel situation works is as follows. I receive the flock, the value of the flock is locked in at $10,000, payable in 10 years. In 10 years, presumably, I don't really give him the flock. What do I give him? I give him money. But let's say I don't have the funds. So what is the Akum going to do? He's going to take animals, right? And at the end of the day, if I don't have enough animals, what is he going to take? Offspring. So because, like we said before, the entire flock is essentially encumbered to the Akum, therefore what? Hariyat Ovid Kochavim Be'emtza. Ultimately, again, the Ovid Kochavim has an ownership interest. V'chal Yad Kochavim Ovid Kochavim Be'emtza. P'tura Min HaBachora. And I will say, Aloch HaLamaisa, whenever the Akum has an ownership interest, the halacha is what? The animals will be pater ultimately again from Bechar. So we'll say, so therefore what we end off is as follows. We are now introduced to this tzon barzel agreement. And again, to be clear, in a classic tzon barzel agreement, essentially, ownership of the item is transferred over to the recipient. Right? It's rare in a tzon barzel case that the original owner is going to retain responsibility for depreciation and onus. Rather, essentially, ownership is given over to the recipient. So why the distinction? Therefore, I will say that's why two Jews, says the Brisa, can't enter into a tzon barzel agreement, because that will be ribis. Because then essentially I'm giving my principal plus interest. But in the case of Bechor, the reason why it works is since when the Akum comes to get paid back 10 years later, if I don't have the money, he can go in and take any of the flock, including any of the offspring. That's called Yad Oved Kochavim Be'emtza. That's called that the hand of the Akum is involved in the animal, and if the hand of the Akum is involved in the animal, therefore what? It is pater from Bechor. All right, so we'll stop over here for today. I'll share with you a short idea on the parasha.